WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest was 14 years old when he found out that his father was a murderer. He killed his first wife. That revelation is at the center of Lorenzo Carcaterra's new memoir, A Safe Place. Lorenzo is managing editor of the TV series Top Cops and a former reporter for the New York Daily News. He grew up in a tough Manhattan neighborhood known as Hell's Kitchen. His father was a violent man with a raging temper. He frequently beat Lorenzo and his mother. It wasn't until a 1969 trip to Italy that Lorenzo's mother finally told him the family secret. He and his mother were visiting her family. They were far away from Lorenzo's father, who was home in New York. After Lorenzo's mother told him the story of the murder, she left him alone with his thoughts. I asked him if he was shocked.
He was no different, my father, than any of the other men I knew from the neighborhood we lived in. Beatings, both to children and to wives, were what they did. You know, it was how they solved, how they dealt with imminent problems. And so he didn't seem all that unusual. You know, and then you look back, you were told that, A, he's a murderer, so then you piece back things in the past and you start to see that all it would take for him to get to that point is just to push the envelope a little bit further, to keep the fuse lit a few minutes longer. And so then things started to make, to become clearer in my head about him.
Well, when you came home, when you got back to New York with your mother, and he beat your mother again,
right,
did it go through your mind, well, maybe this time he's going to kill her?
Well, I thought that to the day he died, or to the day he could no longer function while he was in the hospital. But I'm always amazed to this day that he never did. And it wasn't a question that, you know, he loved wife number two more than he loved wife number one. In fact, I think he loved his first wife more than he loved my mom. But there was something that held him back. And it could be anything. It could be having killed someone once, he knew how far he had gone and held back. But something held him back. But it's one of the major surprises of my life that he actually never did kill her.
Why did he kill his first wife? I mean, it wasn't like he beat her and beat her and he didn't realize how much he was hurting her and he beat her to death. He intentionally smothered her by putting a pillow over her face in a hotel room.
Yeah, it was called a crime of passion. It was they had separated. They had been married 6 years. And in that period, it was a very stormy 6 years. They were very passionate when they were together. And then they had these outbursts where they would separate for months or weeks at a time. This was, I believe, the third such separation. And they've been negotiating. It was almost like a negotiation to get back together. And it seemed like they were on the right path towards another reconciliation. So he left that morning for the hotel where his wife was staying at with the full intent that this would be the final discussion and then they would be back together again as a family. In the hotel room, she apparently told him that the reconciliation was not possible because she was in love with another man. And this set him off. I mean, he was A, a violent man, B, he was an incredibly jealous man. And he just went into a rage in that room and put a pillow over her face and killed her.
Did you tell your father that you knew?
Not at 14. I didn't tell my father for 8 years after that. For a number of years, it was an unspoken understanding, it seemed to me, between the two of us. I think he knew I knew. I thought he knew that I knew, you know, so it was all that kind of situation. But we never openly spoke about it, and because I simply felt that I needed to know more about the situation than just the one sentence that my mother had told me. When I got back from Italy that summer, I went to the high school library, and I pulled on microfiche, the New York Times. And I found a clipping from November 1, 1946 that, in a couple of paragraphs, talked about my father's arrest. And so that sort of started me. I would talk to a lot of people, both friends and family, but given the nature of the situation where people had for years not talked about this, you couldn't directly ask them. So you had to sort of work around corners and ask indirect questions that would someday, over periods of years and periods of answers, get you to where you wanted to get to. So that took a long time.
And when you did finally tell your father, what did you say? What did he say?
Well, it wasn't like I woke up that morning and said, oh, today, you know, I'm going to talk to Dad about it. But he was having a fight with my mother. I was 22, and just to cool him down, we went and I dragged him to my car for a ride, and we were on the Long Island Expressway. He said one thing, I said another thing, and I just sort of blurted it out about his wife, and he slapped me and asked me never to speak about it again, and we did not speak about it again after that time until he was in the last months of his life in the hospital in St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital in Manhattan, where we spent a lot of time and a lot of hours talking about it.
What kinds of things did you say to each other?
Those last 5 months, he was always curious as to why I wanted to know. I really didn't have a detailed explanation as to why I wanted to know. I just felt it was important to me. It was a part of his life, and since he was my father, it was a part of my life. And we talked about a lot of things. We talked about, he very much, in those 5 months, very, very carefully and slowly, because he was very ill, took me from day one of that marriage, practically, to the final day of that marriage. And that was what I needed. That's what I really wanted from him all those years. And he was more than open about it.
When you found out that your father murdered his first wife, did you feel more responsible about protecting your mother against your father's beatings?
Yes, I think so. I think that's one of the reasons I stayed at home till practically my mid-20s, when most guys were getting their own apartment at 18. Yeah, I was always concerned about it. I mean, he was very physical towards her. I mean, he thought nothing. To him, it wasn't even an argument just to simply slap her. That was sort of, you know, she asked the question that was inappropriate. So I was very concerned. And she's not a big woman. She's a very, like most Italian mothers, she's about 5'1", and a very quiet woman. So I stayed around longer probably than I should have for my own benefit, but I stayed around for what I thought were valid reasons.
There's a passage from the book I'm going to ask you to read, in which you describe how you finally left home, and your father had brutally beaten your mother. Then he was beating you. You took out a knife, and what you were considering using it.
Briefly, yes. It was a pretty intense scene. And
do you want to set it up? Set up the scene before you do the reading.
Yeah, it was just one final, one final confrontation in a series of violent confrontations. I mean, I just felt that in order for, and these were feelings that I had throughout, but it just came to a boiling point that one of us had to either die or leave, and that it just couldn't go on anymore.
Your father had a knife. He dropped it.
Right.
Okay, and that. Why don't you read the passage for us?
Okay. Come on, One Punch, my father said. Stand up for yourself. Be like your old man. I killed. So can you. I took a step toward him, the knife at my side, wiping at thin streams of blood with the back of one hand. Outside, I heard loud knocking on our front door. That's it, my father said. Get even. That's what you want. Here's your chance. Won't take much. One shove, fast, in and out. You can do it. I know you can. We stared at each other for the longest time, both of us breathing hard, our bodies covered in sweat. Our hands were clenched. One of mine was still wrapped around a knife. What's it gonna be, One Punch, my father said. I ain't got all day. I tossed the knife back to the floor. You're not worth it, I said. I know, my father said. He put a hand towel under the cold water faucet, wadded it up, and tossed it to me. Clean yourself up, he said. You got blood all over your face. He lifted my mother to her feet and helped her onto a chair. He then bent down, picked up the knife, and held it in his hand for a few seconds. He turned around and threw it into the kitchen sink. I can't stay here anymore, I said to both my parents. I just can't. Then don't, my father said. Don't worry about us. We'll be fine. I bent down and kissed my mother on the cheek and walked by my father, nodding at him as I passed. Hey, One Punch, my father said. You were right about one thing. What? I said, turning back to him, one arm inside the sleeve of a denim jacket. You'll never be a murderer, my father said. Never. It ain't in you. Now you can rest easy. You're not going to be like your father. To hell what everybody else may tell you. You and me, we know the truth. I nodded and walked out of the apartment, and far away from the only life I had ever known.
Were you worried about that? Were you worried that you had the potential of being a murderer yourself?
Yes. I thought about it for a... well, I think the thing that I know, because of the upbringing I had and the family I have and had, that I'm capable of it, that my father did it, and I'm capable of it. I do know we're all capable of it. The only thing is I'm comfortable with the knowledge that we can do it. We are capable of killing someone, each of us. And for a number of years, that it was a fear inside of me rather than just a fact. It was more fear than fact. I was afraid to have children for a number of years. I was afraid to get too involved with someone who may want to marry. But now it's just a realization that it's a fact which exists, that any one of us at any given time can take someone's life. My father just happened to have been one of those people who did do that, and I'm well aware of the violence that's inherent in all of us.
When you had your hands on a knife during that fight with your father, did you ever seriously consider stabbing him?
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't a long thought. It was for a few seconds. But, yeah, I could have seen myself do that, sure.
And what stopped you?
Well, my mother was there, for one thing. And two, you know, maybe I'm not as tough as I thought, or maybe I'm not as violent as I imagined.
Well, your father was really egging you on. I mean, he'd beaten your mother.
Yeah.
He'd beaten you. He was saying, come on, just do it.
Yeah.
But
I think he wanted to see if, you know, what I had in me, whether I was capable of doing it to him at that moment.
You think in some sick way he would have been proud of you if you stabbed him?
No. I think he was proud of me that I didn't.
Uh-huh.
Because that, you know, I think in his own way he probably thought about it too, that whether I was capable or whether I was going to kill somebody. And this proved to him. I mean, he rested easy after that. Uh-huh. And also, the times we saw each other after that were not violent ones.
My guest is Lorenzo Carcaterra. He's written a new memoir called A Safe Place, The True Story of a Father, a Son, a Murder. And it's the story of his father, how his father beat his mother, and how his father murdered his first wife. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Lorenzo Carcaterra. He's written a new memoir called A Safe Place, which is the story about his father and how Lorenzo learned that his father actually killed his first wife. When you walked out on your parents and you just, after that fight, you decided to just leave home,
mm-hmm.
What did you think would happen when you left? I don't mean just that night, but...
In general?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leaving them to each other the way you did.
I thought what would happen is what did happen, and luckily that they would eventually move back to Italy. They were living then in the Bronx, in an area that was sort of starting to fall apart, and my mother had apartments in Italy, and they could have a better life. They did move back there, and while the con games my father pulled continued, they were of a much more limited scope, and while the beatings continued, because she was there surrounded by her own family, they were very limited in number. So I thought she'd be safer there. And in order for her to get there, I had to leave. And it dawned on me, you know, probably a couple years later than it should have, that that's what would have happened. And that's what in turn did happen.
You'd advised your mother when you were in your 20s that she should just get away from your father,
yeah.
That she should go to Italy herself,
right.
Go back to her family and get away from him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that made a lot of sense to you. Why wouldn't she do that?
Well, she's of a generation. She's cut from a different cloth. I mean, they're just women like my mother play the card that's dealt. And the card that's dealt is if you're happily married, you're married to a terrific man, that's the card. If you're married to somebody who beats you and abuses you and doesn't work and... rifles up debts, that's the card. But whatever, regardless of what color the card is, you stay. You don't leave.
Do you think your parents loved each other?
Yeah, I do. I do. There were times when I thought I was the one that was insane. I mean, they'd have a fight at 5:30, 6 o'clock that seemed like Ali Frazier, where things were breaking and things. And then at 8 o'clock or whenever it was, 8:30, they'd be in the living room hugging and kissing, laughing and watching Perry Como. So I'd sit in the kitchen and say, you know, it's got to be me. It's got to be. I got to be the one that's nuts because look at them, you know. And anybody who walked in from the outside and saw them, as people have. I mean, people told me who've read the book said, you know, I'm really surprised. I always saw them together, and they were always laughing and giggling like newlyweds. There was a genuine—they grew to love each other. I don't think when they married they loved each other very much. But I think they grew to love one another and care about one another. I mean, I would watch my mother care for him in his last weeks as if they had, you know, an Ozzie and Harriet relationship throughout the 35 years. I mean, you would not know. The nurses at the hospital always commented to me about how close they were. And I think they were very close. It's just the nature of my father's personality was a violent one, that he solved the slightest problem with a fist. But my mother, I think, understood that about him towards the end.
Did you grow up thinking this was normal, that, you know, you get married, you beat your wife, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for a lot of years. I mean, I didn't know any woman up until I went to Italy. I didn't know any woman who had not at least who had not been beaten at least once or twice by her husband in any given year. Our next door neighbor was always in some sort of bandage. The woman who lived next door to us, and her husband was in a wheelchair and he beat her. So I mean, I never met any housewife, and that's all they were. None of them were working women. They were all housewives who did not get beaten. So I began to think this was you met somebody from the neighborhood, you married, and 6 months later you beat her up. But luckily I found out otherwise.
Your father wanted you to be tough.
Yeah.
His nickname for you was One Punch.
Right.
Did you want to be tough too?
All the kids at Hell's Kitchen thought they were tough, so we all thought we were tough. But whether I was or not, I don't know. I didn't enjoy being tough. I mean, the playing the street swagger that you had to play in those neighborhoods. I was much happier sneaking into the library next door and reading some Jack London. But you had to play the game of tough. I wasn't very comfortable with it, never was, and in truth, wasn't very good at it.
You know a story that I find just particularly interesting in the book. It's a story of how you took your lover, who I guess she was about to become your fiance, to meet your father, and your father did this great performance.
Yeah.
He was saying to her, "Oh, well, my son told me you were attractive. He didn't say you were beautiful."
Right,
and he went on and talked about like what a
terrific lady she was.
Yeah, well, how great marriage was, and how much he loved your mother. And
well, I tell you, my father could be here on this show today.
Yeah,
and I'd let him speak for a lot of time. And at the end of the show, you, as well as some of your listeners, would say, "This guy is fantastic. What a great guy. I wish I had a father just like him." And he knew how to charm people. He was a great storyteller. He was a kind of terrific at parties. And people always, you know, I'd have a fight with him on a Saturday night, and then Sunday people would call and say, "Oh, I met your father at a party, man. What a great guy!" And you'd just want to eat the phone. but yeah, he had that knack. He was really good with women, especially, and smooth talked. My mother-in-law met him briefly, and I mean, he hit on her. So it was.
You're kidding.
No. So it was. He heard she was a widow. She's the doctor's widow, and she was very attractive. And he was telling her how beautiful she looked. How he had never met a woman from Ohio, and how they're all so beautiful in Ohio. And
have you gotten offers to make this story into a movie?
They're talking about it now. I don't know anything specific yet, but they're talking about it.
It's funny, you know, you describe how when your father was in the hospital, he thought this would be a good way to make a lot of dough, you know, if he told you his story that somebody would want
to
buy the book or make the movie.
Yeah. This for him, this is the ultimate con, and that's I mean, this is like getting money to tell people everything you did in your life. I think, in a way, I'm sorry that he's, in many ways, I'm sorry he's not alive, but one of the main reasons, he'd be on the book tour. I mean, save me some travel time. He definitely would be having a great time.
That's too weird to think about.
Yeah, but he'd be a great guest.
But, you know, I'll be honest with you, and I've said this before, you never know when you're interviewing someone who is the person that goes home and beats their wife afterwards.
Right.
I mean, I truly have had someone tell me after interviewing like a really sensitive poet, I've had somebody say, I know this person. I'm at the school where they teach, and they seduce their students or they beat their wife, and you just never know.
Well, these guys that I grew up, the guys like my father, they wouldn't do that. I mean, sexual abuse was non-existent in Hell's Kitchen. If they found out you did that, they'd fry you. I mean, there was one drug dealer growing up as a kid in Hell's Kitchen, and somebody put him on the roof of a building and put three bullets in his chest and killed his dog. So that was alien. Physical violence was not the same, did not translate into other forms of violence. They were very much of-the-moment men. If that moment they were hot-tempered, and that moment you had ticked them off, the only reaction they knew was to hit you, to come at you. And that's it. They saw nothing wrong with that. And the men that exist like that today still see nothing wrong with that. They're very comfortable. And they're very gentlemanly. I mean, they would pull a chair out for a woman. If you didn't hold a door up for a woman, I would get slapped. They had their own sort of bizarre manners.
One last question. You've gotten out of that world, you know what I mean, and that mentality. What about friends who you grew up with?
Well, you know, my grammar school class at Sacred Heart, I believe that as of last count, I finished the grammar school with 32 boys. 20 are either dead or in prison. So
there
wasn't very much. We weren't on the fast track to the Ivy League. The ones that made it have done okay. The ones that, you know, I mean, if you can come out of there, you know, the rest of life, I mean, it's hard, but it's not as hard as what you've seen. And you can handle yourself. If you can get through that kind of a life, and a lot of us did, one is an assistant district attorney. Another is a social worker in the Bronx helping kids. So once you can get through that situation, I think you might not have a lot of great qualities, but there's something to you. There's something to you because you've survived something that very few people have survived.
Lorenzo, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Lorenzo Carcaterra is the author of the new memoir, A Safe Place. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.